And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. Hope everything is going great for you today. God bless each and every one of you. And may you be blessed beyond measure in the midst of all the mess. In fact, that's the watchword, right? You're blessed in the midst of the mess. So we have every reason to be hopeful. And I trust that you are just that. I'm E.W. Jackson here on American Family Radio and honored to be a part of this great network. And thank you all for your prayers and your support and your calls. Today, I'm going to do something a little different today than what I normally do because there are lots of issues we could talk about. But I want to talk about something today that keeps popping up in the news. And I've never really gone into it in depth, but I think we need to do that because something hit my transom today, came across my desk today, and I thought, okay, it's time to talk about this stuff and put this in perspective, and that is reparations. I want to talk about reparations today. But before we get there, since Kamala Harris is, of course, dominating the news as the new VP nominee, just picked yesterday by Joe Biden, my impression of her has always been that the woman is somewhat silly. Now, I don't mean that in a sexist way, because men can be silly, too. And what I mean is unserious. And of course, you know, the left would say, hey, you're being sexist. No. I just find her to be silly. I'm trying to think who else in politics have I found to be a little bit silly on the male side. Let me think about that a bit, because that's the impression that I've been left with for her for quite some time. I want you to listen to a clip right now of her interacting with DeGeneres, and you'll get a flavor of what I'm talking about.
If you had to be stuck in an elevator with either President Trump, Mike Pence, or Jeff Sessions, who would it be?
Does one of us have to come out alive?
Now, did you hear the cackle? Does one of us have to come out alive? And you know, folks, I like to think I've got a fairly decent sense of humor. I love to laugh. That wasn't even funny. I mean, it just wasn't funny. But she was just thrilled and tickled with her comedic skills. Does one of us have to come out alive? And then she just cackled like a... Let me stop I'm not sure that would be a metaphor or simile, but she cackled, and you can take that for what it's worth. It was bizarre. You have to see it. How, you know, she just thought that was hilarious, and it wasn't funny at all. But even more serious is the implication that she would, if she were stuck in an elevator with the president and vice president, she would try to kill them. I mean, that's the implication, which is also even less funny than what she tried to turn into a joke when you actually contemplate what the woman is implying there. As usual, the tolerant left, always claiming to care so much about people, can express such hatred that it's beyond the pale. I think about 15 Hollywood celebrities from Snoop Dogg to just a bunch of them. I don't have the list in front of me, but have in one way or another depicted killing the president. That's where we are today. In our dialogue, and that's what Kamala Harris represents. I had Trevor Loudon on yesterday, and he talked a little bit about the very far left communist background of this woman. And it's chilling to think that someone who could, if the American people don't make the right decision here on November 3rd, who could end up a heartbeat away from the president, who could actually become president of the United States. I mean, it almost chokes for me to say President Kamala Harris. Oh, that's a nightmarish vision for the future of our country that simply cannot be allowed to happen. We've got to defeat them at the ballot box. So while they're contemplating violence against the president of the United States and the vice president and actually carrying out violence in cities across this country, we have got to get, metaphorically speaking, violent at the ballot box by voting. That's our violence. We vote. We've got to be registered. We've got to vote. You just heard Pastor McCoy, who I had on a couple of days ago, say that 15 million evangelicals in California, half of them aren't registered. And of those who are registered, only half of them vote. I mean, we talk about an awakening. I think part of an awakening is when the Christians across this country wake up to the fact that we have got to vote, that that's our Christian responsibility. And I'm going to get into that a little bit as we talk about reparations, which I'll also want to get into. What we are facing right now, folks, is not, here again, this is not a political movement. It's really an attempted revolution and coup. That's what we're really facing. Now, I don't know whether this will actually happen or not. But I will share it with you with that proviso. I don't know that it will happen, but Jerome Corsi, who is a friend of mine and I work closely with him, and he's an investigative reporter and has a lot of sources out there. And Jerome Corsi believes that on September 17th, there are plans. He believes there's evidence that there are plans by this revolutionary movement to try to siege the White House. I didn't say seize, but execute a siege against the White House. In other words, to surround the White House and hem everybody into the White House on September 17th, which is Constitution Day. Now, there may well be evidence that that's planned. That doesn't mean it will actually happen. We will see. I have to tell you all, to be very honest, because I'm always resistant to hyperbole and conspiracy theories and but I'll tell you something. I am learning not to do that when it comes to the left. I am learning that the worst you can imagine is often what they will do. I really am. I'm frankly, folks, I'm learning not to underestimate the level of evil that they are prepared to carry out. And so I don't discount that possibility. So we're not dealing with a political movement, really. We're dealing with a revolutionary coup, an attempt to overthrow this country. And to sow, it's in the Saul Alinsky model, to sow tax the system, to put such pressure on the system that it is unable to withstand the pressure and ultimately buckles. It folds under the pressure and allows for a transfer of power to those who have been putting that pressure on the system. And by the way, culturally, you see that happening already. When you see the corporate world and you see the professional sports world literally buckling to the pressure of Black Lives Matter and Antifa and all this social justice nonsense, you know that this stuff that we might have once dismissed as, that's crazy, that'll never happen, we've now got to take seriously. So stand by. We're going to talk about where reparations fits into this process. Back in a moment.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
Let me start with an important question. Should teachers be considered essential workers? Over the last few months, we have designated police officers and firefighters, along with doctors, nurses, and healthcare professionals as essential workers. We've even designated grocery workers, delivery drivers, food processors, and truck drivers as essential. These people, and many others we could list, went to their jobs every day. Some complained, but most considered the potential risks and did what they could to prevent catching the coronavirus. We owe these people a tremendous debt of gratitude. By contrast, lots of public school teachers and the teachers' unions are resisting any attempt to reopen the schools. There have been petitions and even protests. That's why most schools will be closed this fall. We closed down school systems months ago because we assumed that children would be the most vulnerable group during a pandemic. We now know that children are the least vulnerable to the virus. The American Academy of Pediatricians advocated that schools have a goal of having students physically present in schools. The New England Journal of Medicine warns that children living in poverty, children of color, English language learners, children with diagnosed disabilities, and young children face especially severe losses. Will some teachers be more at risk than others if schools reopen? That's possible. But one survey found that only 17% of public school teachers are in the vulnerable age range of 55 or older. This could be managed. Public schools in other countries, in Europe and in Australia, have been able to do this successfully. For years, we've been told that educating the next generation is essential. So why shouldn't governors, mayors, and school administrators designate teachers as essential workers? It is a question that I suggest you ask them, especially during this election season. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
For a free copy of Kirby's booklet, A Biblical View on Antisemitism, go to viewpoints.info/antisemitism. Viewpoints.info/antisemitism.
This is good news, maybe exactly when you need it to. Right now, MediShare is waiving their new member fees. This could save you money on top of all that you'll save each month by becoming a member of MediShare. So many people are looking for a healthcare solution right now, seeing the cost of COBRA plans, for instance. And MediShare is the affordable alternative to health insurance. The typical family saves $500 a month, but you might save even more. MediShare is a Christian community that shares each other's healthcare costs, and because of the current economic situation, they're making it easier than ever. Apply by August 31st, and you can save an additional $170 on your first month. I'll give you the number here in a second, and if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Just tell them the promo code SHARE to receive your additional savings. Maybe now is the time to make the switch, like more than 400,000 people already have, and start saving. Here it is. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
Ryan Fisher here. Kamala Harris says the Chinese virus is worse in the U.S. than other advanced nations. Is she right? In exchange for campaign donations, Senator Harris buried a case against serial child molesters instead of prosecuting them. And when Donald Trump said there were very fine people on both sides, was he talking about neo-Nazis? Next on Focal Point.
The Awakening.
The Awakening.
Download and listen at your leisure with the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to our host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
Now, I do want to get your views on this. And let me say this. I've never said this before on this program, but I think it is worth saying in this particular instance. I want to hear from all of you as always. As we discuss reparations, I particularly want to hear from Americans of African descent, because I want to know to what extent this has any appeal to you. I'm just curious. I've never done any polling to see, and I haven't seen any polls about it. Let me first state my position. I am absolutely, categorically, unequivocally, and uncompromisingly opposed to the very concept of reparations. Not only do I believe that the concept is crazy, but I believe that we do a disservice to our country and a disservice to the black community every time anybody raises the issue of reparations. And let me tell you why. I've got several reasons why. Here's reason number one. Oh, and by the way, why does this come up? On June 1st, Bob Johnson, billionaire, former owner and founder of BET, sold that company. He and his wife are both billionaires. I guess they've divorced, but they split the fortune. They sold that company for, I guess, several billion dollars, and they're both billionaires. Bob Johnson, in case you may not know, Robert Johnson, as maybe he prefers to be called, is black. He's an American of African descent. Well, when I woke up this morning, somebody who I'd really admire, I don't know that much about him, But I admired him because this guy had the courage. Robert Smith is his name. He's reputed to be the wealthiest black man in America. He's worth apparently somewhere in the vicinity of close to $5 billion. And he made headlines, you all probably remember this, when he committed to spending, I think it was about $40 million to pay for the outstanding loans and tuition of the entire black Morehouse College, the Morehouse College, which is a historically black college, the entire class's tuition and loans for that entire class that he spoke to at their graduation. And here's what I really loved about what he had to say. During his speech, he said, "What I'm doing is something that can only happen in America." And I thought, man, that is such a great message. That is such a great message. That's the message these young people need to hear. Well, I got up this morning and he's jumped on the reparations bandwagon. Yeah, black people need to have reparations. And he says corporate America needs to pay reparations to black people. Now, Robert Johnson, by the way, was calling for $14 trillion. And Robert Smith has not given he's worth $5.2 billion. Robert Smith has not given a number, but he's saying that that it is time for us to get to that. And there's some numbers about disparities between black families and white families, you know, the way they put it. I don't really buy it, frankly, because it depends on how you slice and dice these numbers, because how many intact black families are there after all? Far too few with a father in the home. But that aside, let me tell you my first objection. My first objection is that the moment you bring up reparations, you cancel the word responsibility. Because the concept of reparations implies this, that whatever your condition in life, you have no control over it. It is the result of what happened 150 years ago or 50 years ago to your ancestors, to your great-grandparents, your grandparents, your great-great-grandparents, and you simply happen to be a victim of what happened to them. And therefore, you are owed something in order to make you whole as a result of what happened to them. And so you don't have to take any responsibility. All you need to do is wait for somebody to make up what was lost because of the way that your ancestors were treated. And folks, that is just such a lie. It is just such a lie. What happened to my ancestors has absolutely nothing to do with what I do with my life. And we all know that's true. And yet this is what's being sold. Now, you all have heard me talk about my beloved late father, William Jackson, and how he taught me. And I was not given any of this victim nonsense, and you can't do it, and they won't let you, and the society's unjust, and oh, woe is me. My father just never bought that nonsense. And what this whole reparations movement is telling people is, oh, woe is me. Yeah, you know, whatever your condition, it's because your ancestors were deprived. So, you know, I've had this concept in the back of my head for, oh my goodness, 25 or 30 years. I don't think I've ever even talked about it publicly, certainly not on the air. And you know, it's this. The civil rights movement, per se, is dead because there's no longer a need for one. Now, I'm not saying there's no longer a need for civil rights. Obviously, we all need to protect and defend our civil rights as Americans. So I'm not saying there's no need for civil rights, but I'm just saying the movement is dead because the invidious, blatant discrimination that spurred the movement into being is over. That's gone. You know what we need today? We need a civil responsibility movement. A civil responsibility movement. We need to start talking a lot more about our responsibilities at not just our rights and what we feel we are owed. And look, I believe in our fundamental rights. You all know that. But still, I think there's a little too much emphasis on what others are supposed to do for people, what people expect others to do for them, and too little emphasis on what each individual should be expected to do for his or herself. A civil responsibility movement is what we need in America today. For all of us and for all of our young people, because this attitude of entitlement is across the board. It knows no demographic lines. I'm sure there are exceptions, and the kids who are homeschooled, kids who are being taught those fundamental Judeo-Christian values are probably not imbibing this garbage, but I think the vast majority of our kids are being taught to feel entitled rather than being taught to be responsible. And to me, talk of reparations destroys and undermines all of that. And that's the future of our country. The future of our country is in our individual responsibility and individual liberty, not in convincing whole swaths of the population that they're owed something. Because besides that, look, if you're going to have reparations, you've got another, here are a couple of other things that immediately come to mind. Well, does Robert Smith, who's worth $5.2 billion, does he get reparations? Does Robert Johnson, who's worth $1 billion, he get reparations? And on and on and on it goes. Do people who are affluent and doing very well, do they get reparations? And what about people like Kamala Harris and Barack Obama, whose ancestors were never here as slaves? Do they get reparations? What about the people who have mixed ancestry? Do they get reparations? What about the people who are descendants of free black people? And remember, there were tens of thousands of free blacks in the South, not to mention the North, in the South, during the era of slavery. And their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren were free. Do their descendants get reparations too? You see what I'm getting at here? It's absurd. It's absurd. And it is just what it implies. Looking backwards is backwards. Okay? Focusing backwards is backwards. It makes you backwards. And it seems to me that that's what the left wants to do. They want to keep black people backwards. Focus backwards, looking backwards, frankly, moving backwards. And you can't move forward without looking ahead. The Bible doesn't say where there is no looking backwards, the people perish. It says where there is no vision. Well, vision is forward looking. And that's what we need to be emphasizing. And this guy, Robert Smith, now I'm disappointed, because here this guy's worth $5.2 billion, the wealthiest black man in America. And instead of him going out here and saying, we don't need reparations, what we need is responsibility and hard work and good decisions and strong families. And because anybody in America can do what I've done. Anybody in America can succeed. I mean, everybody's not going to be worth $5.2 billion, but everybody in America has the opportunity to do better, to live a good life. Some people don't want money. That's not what their goal is. I mean, everybody wants enough money to live, but some people want to do other things that they think are fulfilling and satisfying. And this is a place where you have the opportunity to do that. That's what we ought to be telling people, not, well, we need reparations. So those are three, the responsibility issue, the looking backwards issue, and the complications of who's entitled to reparations issue. There's one more thing I want to raise. I want to open it up for your questions and comments. And I may throw a couple of other things in the mix. The number is 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. Back in a moment.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Weilman.
As a student at Emory University in Atlanta, I used to occasionally go down to the First Methodist Church to hear the minister, the late Pierce Harris, preach. For many years, Dr. Harris served the church as minister, and his Sunday evening services were attended by people from all over the country. Dr. Harris once told a very dramatic and moving story about an incident which happened to him during his ministry. He was invited once to speak at a prison work camp. The prisoners were out in the open, and Dr. Harris had to speak from the bed of a truck. When it came time to introduce the speaker, one of the prisoners mounted the truck bed to make the introduction. The prisoner began his introduction by telling a story. Several years ago, he stated, two boys lived in the same community of North Georgia. They attended the same school, played with the same bunch of boys, even went to the same Sunday school. The prisoner continued, but one of the boys dropped out of the Sunday school because he felt he had outgrown it and that it was sissy stuff. The other boy kept going because he felt it was meaningful for his life. You know, one stops at that point in the prisoner's introduction to do a little bit of thinking. What makes people drop out of Sunday school? I guess that the answer to that question is as varied as there are those who drop out. While often part of the reason is the way in which Sunday school is conducted, most of the time it's due to a lack of interest on the part of the dropout and or his parents. I guess many people don't value the worth of the Sunday school very much. If they did, they would stay with it even when it gets dry and dull, or even when it appears to be a little sissy. Another thing one thinks about is what causes people to go wrong, to break the laws of society by which people live. Again, one could say that sometimes the laws aren't just and the prisoners are only victims. However, incidents of that nature are very, very few in number. In the vast majority of cases, the person sets himself above the law and ignores it. Of course, society has an influence on each person in the choices that he makes. But in the final analysis, each person chooses for himself the route his life will follow. He can choose to obey the law or to ignore it. The prisoner on the bed of the truck concluded his introduction of Dr. Harris. The boy who dropped out of Sunday school, the prisoner said, stands before you today to introduce the speaker. The boy who stayed in Sunday school is the one who will speak. Don't let anyone kid you. Your relationship to the church does have a very definite influence on the outcome of your life. Just remember this. Church business isn't sissy kid stuff.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
The Awakening.
The Awakening.
Download and listen at your leisure with the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to our host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And we're back. So, yeah, reparations, huh? And, you know, isn't it fascinating that you've got wealthy people who have done extraordinarily well in this country, who are billionaires, calling for reparations? And, you know, you wonder, is that them saying, hey, don't try to take what I've got. I'm for you getting your share too. You know, you just wonder, are they simply trying to cover themselves against the rabble? Because their lives are a testament to the fact that anybody can succeed in America. And yet, they're saying, oh no, we've got to have reparations for all these poor people. Oh, boy, I said we need a civil responsibility movement. And then reparations. Who gets it? I mean, who's really entitled? And my goodness, how much is it? We didn't even talk about that. But Robert Johnson said $14 trillion. You know, I mean, it's absurd. Let me give you three other things, and I want to take your calls. If we're going to start down that road, don't we need to give reparations to the Irish who did some of the most dangerous jobs when they first came to this country, found signs saying no Irish need apply, lived in tenements, died building bridges and digging out tunnels and Shouldn't we give reparations to the Chinese who died by the thousands building the railroad? Should we give reparations to the Jewish people who came here and were not allowed to apply to colleges? We're not given those opportunities in the early part of the 18th and 19th centuries. I'm not saying none got an education, but generally speaking, universities didn't want Jewish people. Should we pay them reparations too? What about the Italians who came here and faced a lot of discrimination when they arrived on the shores, called nasty names, given the worst jobs? Do they get reparations? What about women? Women have only been able to vote for 100 years. As of August 18th, it'll be 100 years since women got the right to vote. What about all those years women couldn't vote? What about all those years they weren't considered their own person? They were either attached to their father or attached to their husband and didn't even have the ability to appear or to testify in court. Do we owe women reparations for the lack of progress perhaps that they made educationally and otherwise? Because for the first, 150 years of the country's existence, they weren't even given the franchise. And on and on and on and on it goes. That's what this backwards gazing stuff will do for you. It'll have you locked in whatever the mistakes, sins, misgivings of the past might be, and have everybody at each other demanding, I'm entitled because my ancestors had this happen. My ancestors had that happen. That brings me to the next point, which is it is a sin to demand that one generation pay for the sins of another generation. It is a sin to do that. It is a sin to say to people, well, your ancestors did this, that, or the other to my ancestors. I mean, you realize how far you could spin that back? I mean, every ethnicity that's been at war with another ethnic group, or every nation that's been at war with another nation that suffered any loss, I mean, that puts you in a death loop, demanding that each generation pay for the sins of a prior generation. And then here's the last thing, and then I'll take your calls. 888-589-8840. Here's the last thing, and this to me is the pièce de la résistance. Now, I should be able to say that if I'm going to use it, right? It's this, folks. It will never be enough. It will never be enough. You come up with some number and you start giving out checks or whatever you do, and it won't be long before somebody will say, you know, you can never give enough for the wrongs that were done, and that was only a down payment. And on and on and on it goes. These wealthy, successful black folks need to shut up talking about reparations and start talking about responsibility and start instilling vision and hope in these young people, regardless of race, and telling them about the great country that allowed them to achieve what they've achieved, and then how they as young people can do the same. And here are the things that I did that made it possible for me to succeed. And if you do these things, you too will succeed. Stay out of trouble. Stay out of the clutches of the criminal justice system. Don't use drugs. Get married before you have children. Work hard. Take responsibility for your job seriously. Make it a matter of your personal pride. Learn as much as you can. Maybe you'll start a business. Maybe you'll one day be the manager. But you have to be a person who is committed to having value in and of yourself, and others will see that value in you, and it will open doors of opportunity for you, because we are a free country and we're built on free enterprise. And where people see value, they are willing to pay for it. That's the way America works. But oh no, 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 we need reparations. Oh no, we need Black Lives Matter. We need, don't call the NBA owners, because that harks back to slavery. You got to call them governors. I mean, you know, folks, this is a way of driving people into a nervous breakdown with all this nonsense. Okay. 888-589-8840. Let's get to your calls. There are other things, but you know, we're on a roll with this. So let's roll with it, shall we? And let's see. Let's go to Fred in Virginia. Fred, welcome.
Bishop, great topic, and it is very, very thought-provoking. And is of great interest. I don't think I've heard your show before. I listen to American Family Radio all the time as I travel from Virginia to North Carolina to South Carolina, and I think you've got a great show.
Thank you.
I've been a regular listener of Rush Limbaugh since the show started back in the early 90s. And I think he also has an intriguing show. About reparations as a topic, I'll use this example. To say reparations is about like asking someone to go to the polls on November 3rd to vote for president. Who do I vote for? Nobody's listed. What do they stand for? Nobody's listed. What's their platform? Nobody's listed. What is their background? Nobody's listed. How do you know who you vote for? You don't. So the term reparations, as it is currently used, it's a blank slate that any and everybody can fill in all of the blanks. Mm-hmm. There's nothing there. And I've listened to you intently. You've cited a number of different items and questions and scenarios. I agree with every one of those that you mentioned, every one of those. At the same time, as a close study of history, I know how this country got built. I know primarily whose blood, sweat, and tears built this country. Just like with the house, the first thing that you do when you're building a house, you dig a foundation. You go down in the ground first.
Don't hold us in suspense, Fred. Whose blood, sweat, and tears built the country from your view?
Excuse me?
Whose blood, sweat, and tears built the country from your view?
It was on the backs of the enslaved who were bought here, who were told in this country for no pay whatsoever over hundreds of years.
Well, I tell you what,
that is what the southern economy was built on in terms of the crops. Those crops, particularly cotton, were transported to the north, oftentimes made in the fabric and twine and everything else.
That's true.
And shipped back to Europe.
Well, now, Fred, let me just say this. You stated a conclusion, and then the evidence you gave was proof that slavery played a part in the economy, but it was not proof that slavery built the country. And here's the thing that I always point out. Yes, slavery played an important part in the American economy, particularly in the South. But when you look at the diversity of America's economy, and you look at the fact that America is the most creative nation that's ever existed in terms of, right now, over half the patents that emerge in the world come from our country, and we're only 4% of the population. So yes, slavery played a role, but I think it overstates the case to say that the country was built on slavery. It was built on the industrialization of the North. It was built on the innovation of a lot of different people. It was built on the pioneering folks who went out west and sometimes lost their lives trying to establish homesteads and ranches. And so it's a little bit more complicated than that. So I get your point. It played a role, but it did not build America. It was one thing in the whole process. And I don't think it justifies, giving reparations for that. Back in a moment.
Coronavirus pandemic.
I've been seeing how people have been responding to how certain events are going on in the world.
Faith and Peace in the Midst of Chaos, an article by Maddie King.
Maybe this is just God giving us a sign saying that we need to come back in prayer and repentance. I don't know about you, but if you look outside, you can see how sinful and worldly we've really become as a people.
To read this article and more, visit EngageMagazine.net.
Hello, I'm Franklin Graham. Right now, our country is in trouble, and people are scared, people are afraid, and we see the violence and the injustices that are taking place. Only God can change this. This is a problem of the human heart.
If you'd like to pray with someone, call us any time of the day or night at 888-388-2683. 888-388-2683.
Call that number right now. We've got someone who will pray with you, talk with you, encourage you. God bless.
What happens when an abortion-minded woman hears her baby's heartbeat on an ultrasound? Here's how a nurse describes the power of an ultrasound.
When she saw the picture of her baby on ultrasound and saw that beating heart, it was a defining moment that just broke her, and she said, I just can't allow this baby to be killed.
By letting a mother hear her baby's heartbeat and see her baby in her womb, she'll choose life 80% of the time.
I cannot tell you how many times a baby's life is saved through ultrasound. It's just an incredible tool.
Preborn centers are the largest providers of free ultrasounds in the country and the direct competition to Planned Parenthood. By letting a mother see her baby on ultrasound and hear the heartbeat, she'll choose life 80% of the time. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby.
We need creative ways so that families, first of all, know they're remembered, they're thought of.
Emily Colson on Focus on the Family Minute.
When we're driving to church, I guarantee you we are passing by homes where families are staying home on Sunday morning like we did for 5 years because I couldn't figure out how to do it. I just couldn't figure out how my wiggly loud child would be in a church. And we are passing by those homes where those families are looking out the windows saying, I wish I could go to church. I wish the church knew I was there. So I think it's first looking at our congregations, who is in the church, who do we have there, how can we better serve them? It starts with asking, right? It's this really complicated thing. You ask, how can we be there for you?
More from Emily at familyminute.org.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
In fact, and I really do appreciate the call from that last caller. And again, you Americans of African ancestry, I'm curious to know your perspective on this. So let me just take a quick minute. You know, this is one of the myths that's perpetuated to drive this, which is the country was built on the black backs of slaves. It's just not true. It's just not true. Now, in fact, according to David Barton, who is a reliable source as far as I'm concerned, only 8% of the Southerners actually owned slaves, A. But even if you dispute that percentage, let's make one other thing clear. Inasmuch as slavery may have helped the economy of the South, and it certainly helped people to live rather sedentary lives and not have to do work who had enough money to own slaves, but guess what? It also held back the economy of the South from developing, because West Virginia broke away from Virginia precisely because free people found they could not compete with slave labor. And they had a very difficult time making ends meet, living decent lives, because their laborers, their skills weren't needed because people had, you know, people with money had slaves to do the work. So in some ways, it held back the economy from growing and thriving in all sectors and segments of the economy. And that's how West Virginia was created. And people, free people saying, some of them black too, saying, you know, we can't compete with slave labor and we don't want to be a part of it. So it's just more complicated than that. And with that thrown out, yeah, you know, the country was built on the backs of slaves. I mean, that's just something that's thrown out there to again, justify the sense that America's not legitimate and America wouldn't exist as a prosperous nation except for slavery. And by the way, I also do not believe that that's true. I think the country would have grown differently without slavery, but I believe that the country would have grown and prospered with slavery because the key to the country's prosperity was not slavery. It was freedom for those who experienced it. And by the way, just as I started talking about Robert Smith and Robert Johnson, two Roberts, huh? Both black billionaires. How did they become black billionaires? Freedom. Freedom. Okay, let's come back to your calls. Let's go to Robert in North Carolina. Robert, welcome.
Hey, Bishop. Simplify, Devil Dog.
All right, simplify.
I just wanted to make a couple of comments. It's about language, and you being a pastor, you know that life and death is the power of the tongue. And I just want to take this word racism, and I just want to put it out there that a race is who we are as human beings. We are of human race, and we have an ethnicity. And how we choose to live that out is up to us. And I just think that, you know, that we need to put those words, race and ethnicity, we need to be putting those words in the right context all the time. You know, I think we've let it slip a little bit, especially the race word. There is truly only one race, and that is us human beings. And we're all brothers and sisters from Adam. Unfortunately, we're not all brothers and sisters in Christ. That would be Amen. Nice if we could all be that. But and another thing, I was listening to Sandy Rios this morning, and she talked about Sweden. And this is about COVID. This is a little off subject, but it's about the COVID thing. And I would just like to hear you guys, you and today's issues, and I'd like to hear you guys speak more about Sweden when it comes to COVID-19. And what she said was that they didn't social distance, they didn't wear masks, they didn't lock down, and they just kind of went ahead and went with the herd immunity side of the whole situation, and now there's really no COVID in Sweden, so... or very little COVID in Sweden, anyway. And I'd like you guys to mention that a little bit more when you're talking about COVID, maybe.
All right. Okay. Well, Robert, we appreciate the call very much, and I take both points. And you are right. There's ultimately only one human race. Acts 17:26 says he has made from one blood all nations of men to dwell on all the face of the earth, and determine their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwelling. So you are absolutely right. As you all know, I don't like phrases like white and black because I just think they're inaccurate. But, you know, the language, we're so imbued with them now. And I certainly don't like the phrase people of color because all people have color. You know, I mean, what is this? Some people have color and some people don't. No, everybody has color. The colors are just different. That's all. Okay, but thank you for the call, Robert. Let's go to Mark in Arkansas. Mark, welcome.
Yes, sir. Mr. Jackson, first of all, yes. I'd like to thank you for your service for Christ and the way that you you model it with your life. And secondly, I would like to thank you for your service to my country as a Marine.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
You hit the nail on the head earlier when you were talking about the different groups of people that came here as immigrants. It wasn't just Africans. There were also, you know, Irish, and there were Chinese, and there were Italian, and pretty much everybody that came here was an immigrant, except for the Native American. Some people were treated horribly. Some people were treated Yep. very badly. But at no point should a future generation be rewarded or paid for the way that their ancestors got treated. Just like at no point in the future should a future generation have to pay for the sins of their forefathers, of their ancestors. That's Yeah. played out over and over and over in God's word.
Amen. And you know, you just raised an important point. I didn't make that point. From a Christian perspective, that is morally wrong. It is morally wrong for me to hold you accountable for something some ancestor of yours did, because the Bible makes clear that each of us answers for our own sins. We don't answer for the sins of others. So, Mark, thank you so much for the call. Let's go to Wesley in Georgia. Wesley, welcome.
Hey, Bishop, quick history lesson. First off, let me say the idea that any person of European descent in this country today has any kind of financial privilege or propping up due to their ancestors owning any slaves of African descent 150 years ago, that whole idea is completely insane, as you know.
Right.
If you study history, virtually every slaveholding family, quote-unquote white family in the South that had slaves prior to the Civil War, was financially
devastated after the Civil War. Any kind of gold and silver they may have had before the war was donated to the war cause, and all the rest of their capital was tied up in Confederate war bonds and Confederate cash, which was completely worthless after the Civil War. What few of them did manage to hang on to some land and had some slaves stick around and help them grow a cotton crop the next year, lost all the rest of their money trying to grow cotton because the price fell rock bottom. So they all lost, the ones that did have any money, but both of them lost all their money too. And the few families that did manage to hang on to some money lost all their money years later in the Great Depression. So this idea that anybody in this country of European descent has any kind of financial gain today because their ancestors owned slaves, I mean, that's just completely insane. And if you study history, I mean, it's right there for you to read. So,
hey, Wesley,
I just want to tell the rest of your listeners, man. So.
Thank you, Wesley. Excellent, excellent historical point. And, you know, you just made me think of something else, which is, should those who fought in the Civil War on the side of the Union, should they have, whose ancestors were killed or maimed, should they get reparations too? I mean, see, this is what I mean. This stuff, it's just a never-ending cycle of rehearsing the bitterness and divisions of the past. Let's go to Kenny in Tennessee. Kenny, welcome.
Shiva, thank you for taking my call today. Just to go with that point, you know, it's a very difficult concept to get, you know, people to wrap their head around. The United States was formed under the idea of liberty. And so it was liberty that really changed the whole concept of slavery in the South. The Second Continental Congress, they couldn't figure out how to just eliminate slavery, right? You got, I think in Virginia, there was maybe 500,000 slaves.
Oh, yeah.
And what are you going to do with all of these folks that, okay, well, you can't work here anymore. Go on, go. Hopefully you survive. I mean, it was very complicated. It's like today saying, let's get rid of all of the social programs that we have immediately because it's wrong. Well, now you put so many millions of people out on the street with no revenue source of income to pay for their food and stuff. So that's an issue. Well, you have the issue, just to go along with your last comment. I mean, how many, I think it was a couple hundred thousand people in just fighting on the cause of liberty for blacks in the South that gave their lives, you know, and I think the percentage of that were white people was pretty enormous. And it was that whole idea. We've got to move forward with this idea of liberty. We can't just say, give me liberty or give me death, and then just allow these people to be impoverished by this or oppressed by the same type of mentality that we just got out from under. So anyway, that was my thought.
Well, Kenny, thank you so much for the call. And you're right. I mean, this is part of what the left does. You know, demagogues aren't interested in the nuances or the facts or the gradations or the minutiae that sometimes make a major impact on understanding matters. They're only interested in the broad sweeping statements that serve to manipulate the people that they're using the demagoguery to manipulate, to move. And when you start learning more about history, you realize, wow, you know, I said to my church on Sunday, you know, our founding fathers and the people who run before us, they were just like us. They were just human beings trying to figure it out, doing the best they can in most cases. So folks, no, we don't need reparations. We need responsibility and we need vision. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much. We cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.